If you go to our website, herenow.org, you'll see one of the stories that people are seeking out is 2 years old. That's because David Wallace Wells' book at that time laid out everything we heard in yesterday's stomach-churning climate report, which simply stated, even if countries sharply cut emissions starting right now, we have a small window to avoid climate catastrophe. Global warming is likely to rise by about 1.5 degrees Celsius within the next two decades, long cited as the tipping point. David Wallace Wells' 2019 book, it's example-packed, science-filled, and in-your-face. It's titled The Uninhabitable Earth. His opinion piece in the New York Times was titled It's Time to Panic. Yet even then, at the end of our conversation in 2019, he said, nothing's baked in stone beside a few more tenths of a degree in temperature rise. We have the power to cut carbon and create policy to make the future livable. So what does he think now? David Wallace Wells is an editor-at-large at New York Magazine. David, you know, that UN-backed climate report said we have a short window to reduce emissions by 2015. We heard experts yesterday say, remember, that means we have to start that in the next 10 years. Do you still believe this sort of catastrophic outlook isn't baked in stone?
I think we're already in a dangerous future, and there's no going back to the climate that we thought we'd have when we were growing up, whether we're 30 or 50 or 70 or 110. The question is how much more dangerous from here it's going to get. And that is not just still up to us today. It will always be up to us. We're likely to be, I would guess, passing 1.5 degrees quite quickly. I would say that the UN report, which suggested it would happen early next decade, maybe a little, we may do it a little sooner than that. And from there, things are going to get remarkably grim. But compared to a world of 3 or 4 or 5 degrees warming, you know, every tenth of a degree matter and every half a degree matter. So I do still think we have our hands on the, you know, on the steering wheel here. It's just the road is getting pretty treacherous already.
By the way, I'm going to ask you to keep your headset microphone still if you can, because this is apocalyptic enough. kind of hearing some sounds there. I mean, this is frightening to hear you. And this is, I think, why people are really gravitating towards what you've written, because you're not just giving us that headline. That scares the heck out of us. You're talking about what has to happen. And, you know, we all know, eat less meat or none if you can, or, you know, reduce your own use of, you know, cars and things. But you're talking about having to invent new airplanes.
You know, just about every aspect of modern life is dependent on carbon, which means that we need to reinvent just about everything, just about every feature of the way we live today. And that's quite daunting. To put it in perspective with a little bit of news from this report in particular, this is, you know, listeners should know, this is not a report that really intends to break news. It's a synthesis of existing science. But every time one comes out, a few things sneak in that hadn't exactly been acknowledged before. And one of the headlines for me in this report is that we've already put enough carbon into the atmosphere to warm past 1.5 degrees, which had been the goal of the Paris Accords. It's being masked by all of the air pollution that we've produced, which has a cooling effect on the planet. So if we reduce our fossil fuel use and reduce that air pollution, ultimately we're going to be bringing probably something like a half a degree more of warming about just from cleaning up the air and actually solving the problem that we face. Now, the report also said we could possibly counteract that if we also cut our methane emissions rapidly enough. It's complicated to explain, but methane is a much more intense warming gas than carbon, but it lasts in the atmosphere for a much shorter amount of time, which means you could really take quicker action with methane than you can with carbon, which hangs in the air for centuries. Nevertheless, just as a basic fact, the idea that we have already produced something like a true global warming of, say, 1.7 degrees, not 1.2 degrees, as we often talk about. But it just happens that the planet is cooler than that because we're also polluting so much that we're reflecting sunlight back into the atmosphere. That's quite scary. It also tells you how far along on this timeline we really are, where, you know, we've talked about these two thresholds, 1.5 degrees and 2 degrees, as the sort of, you know, in one case, 1.5, it's our best case, what we need to aim for kind of future. And at 2 degrees, it's this catastrophic level of warming that island nations have called genocide and African climate diplomats have called death for their continent.
Yeah.
But if the true, you know, sort of quote unquote true global warming level today is already north of 1.5, that just tells you how little time we have to avoid even 2 degrees, which is what all the nations of the world are at least nominally devoted to, although they're not yet walking the walk, just talking the talk.
And by the way, we'll have both of our previous conversations as well at hereandnow.org along with this one. But, you know, what you talk about is stunning, and including the fact that this isn't, you're not a guy that's had your hair on fire for decades about this. This, you know, you considered yourself a smart, open-minded person who did recycling, but you dove into this and you've become this person who has, you know, really invested in this science, learning that, you know, workers in Guatemala and Honduras already have liver failure because of lack of water when they work, that there's already been species that have gone extinct because we all have bacteria in our gut that lives happily there and keeps us functioning. And when this heat changes, that bacteria changes and killed off an entire species of antelope. Can you just give us a little more example? I mean, it's, as I said to you then, you have to have nerves of steel just to read this book, but give us just a, you know, tick through a few more examples of what we're not thinking about.
In the big picture, it's, you know, I would say my own story is really illustrative in that I, up until a few years ago, felt that, you know, obviously climate change was real and meaningful and an important challenge, but I also felt that I really lived entirely outside of it. And the main thing that I've learned in spending so much time with this is just how you can't possibly live outside it. Everything that we've ever done as a species is dependent on climate conditions we've already left behind. That's because the planet's already warmer today than it ever has been in the entire history of human civilization. It's like we've landed on a totally new planet. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to see those impacts, you know, every year in different ways. You know, the extreme weather, wildfires, these are, you know, the familiar ones. But it's also worth noting they're getting much, much worse. You know, the California wildfires last year were more than twice as bad as the record season that came just 2 years before, which was dramatically worse than had ever happened before. And the season last year, which we didn't pay that much attention to because of COVID, actually produced so much air pollution that in the western U.S., more air pollution was produced from the burning of forest than from all other human and industrial activity combined. And the effects of air pollution, I think, are really one of the truly underestimated and underappreciated effects of fossil fuel burning. It's not exactly climate change, but it's produced by the same thing that produces climate change. Scientists estimate that about 10 million people are dying every single year from the effects of air pollution globally, that globally the average life expectancy is cut by 2 full years, and in some hard-hit countries like India, you can see regions of the country where people are losing 9 years of life on average to air pollution. There are huge swaths of the world, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, that have already had some significant share, perhaps 20 or 30% of their potential for economic growth reduced or eliminated by the effects of climate.
Yeah.
And then you start to see, you know, the growth of the footprint of mosquitoes, which could carry tropical diseases as far north as the Arctic Circle in a few decades. Heat deaths are expected to rise dramatically in places like the U.S., but maybe most dramatically in places like South Asia and the Middle East, where as soon as 2050, we could have 200 or more days of lethal heat every single year.
Look, the list goes on. But I want to reinforce, we have less than a minute here, but I want to reinforce, David Wallace Wells, that you and others say it's fine to do the small things that we do. That's good. But the biggest thing that people can do right now is fight to make sure that the policy starts, that the work starts.
The most important thing that we can do, even as individuals, is to try to inspire some kind of policy change, because the challenge that we face is far too big for anyone to solve on their own, or even any mass of individuals to solve on their own. The systems are far too large and far too entrenched for that to work. We need that large-scale transformation.
David Wallace Wells, again, the book Uninhabitable Earth. I can't recommend it enough. We'll have our previous conversations with him at hereandnow.org. He's also an editor at New York Magazine. David, thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.